We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Bucks won a f***ing NBA championship.
Yeah!
What? What?
He tries to take a pulse, babe.
Watching that basketball game, like, caused health problems for me.
Boogie hates racism and Chris Paul. And who cannot get on board with that platform?
If I've learned a lot, I'm not going to say it. That sounds too
bad.
No.
The Bucks do win it all. Pat Connaughton's numbers should be in the rafters.
Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep. Well, kind of. I am Ty Windisch, host of the Eurostep, not joined by my spunky co-host Rohan Kadi or any other of our GSPN friends. This is actually a spot I did with Justin Rowan of the Chase Down, a tremendous Cleveland Cavaliers podcast after the Bucks dispatched the Cavs in a thrilling game on Wednesday night. So we had a conversation about that game, the Cavs, Evan Mobley, Giannis, the Bucks, of course, the Jordan Wara game a little bit there at the end, and all sorts of stuff. Really fun conversation. Just wanted to share with Eurostep listeners. So be sure, if you're not already subscribed to the Chase Down, go do that. They cover the Cavs, but really do awesome work featuring other teams as well. So plug is over. Podcast begins now.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rohn. No Carter Rodriguez on the podcast today. He is once again running from the grind. So I brought on one of my favorite people to talk basketball with about my least favorite game of the season, Ty Windisch of the Eurostep Podcast. Ty, how you doing, buddy? Welcome back.
I'm great. I was going to say I love when you lie on air for me, but then you said the least favorite game part, I think, brought it back to more reality. But I'm great. The Milwaukee Bucks sneak out a win against the feisty Cleveland Cavaliers, losing streak aside. And it was kind of maybe not a fun game for your side, from the Bucks side. And I think, you know, at least late in the game, it really did seem like in that fourth quarter that, oh, they might come steal this thing. We've seen the Darius Garland heroics, certainly this season, Donovan Mitchell heroics. We did get a little quiet on our live stream for the game, but happy that the Bucks ended up pulling it out somehow.
Yeah, the Cavs suffered their first blowout loss of the season. It did look like that fourth quarter, that, you know, when you cut it to under 10 points with over 7 minutes to go, that's a legitimate comeback. I had joked with Carter. I said maybe we'll see a fake comeback to protect the net rating tonight. Did not happen. But, you know, they got within that range where you could actually have a legitimate one that I wouldn't just make fun of. But it was an interesting game. Obviously, Milwaukee Bucks very shorthanded coming into this game. Cavs without Dean Wade and Jared Allen. Obviously missed the presence of both of those guys on the defensive end of the court. But I thought the Cavs had more than enough coming into this game to come away with a win. I felt that way throughout this five-game losing streak. And honestly, the first half, I thought the Cavs outplayed the Bucks. I thought they outplayed the Bucks by a larger margin than the score. In the first half, the real things that jumped out was the Bucks out-rebounded them, especially on the offensive glass, giving themselves those extra possessions. And while later in the game, I think there were more breakdowns from the Cavs on the defensive end of the floor, especially guarding the three-point line, I thought the first half they actually did a good job defending the three. Bucks were just hitting a lot of contested shots in that first half, and I think once they got into a groove, it was tough to turn that faucet back off.
Yeah, I think so too, which is a little bit of a rarity for this version of the Bucks. As you mentioned with the injuries, Chris Middleton yet to play this season. Seems like coming back from wrist surgery, and also it's kind of been a little quietly reported that he's dealing with a death in the family as well. So certainly a lot going on for Chris. Pat Connaughton, with a calf strain in the preseason, didn't play at all, was probable the day of the game, doesn't end up playing. So those are, you know, two of the Bucks' best three shooters. Grayson Allen also in that conversation, also out tonight after getting hurt on Monday. So the Bucks really needed this after some games recently where I think last game outside of rookie Marjon Beauchamp, Serge Ibaka, and Jordan Wara, they were like 0 for 14 from deep. So this has not been the norm, but Brook Lopez really carried a lot of the load from the shooting wise. Jordan Wara
didn't love him
late.
Going full Klay Thompson, the 7 foot Klay Thompson, because like those shots were ridiculously far behind the arc. And the Brook Lopez resurgence. I know the Bucks have dealt with a lot of injuries, but especially coming off the surgery he had last season, that has definitely been one of the bright spots for Milwaukee.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just the fact that he looks better than last season defensively. I thought he looked fine overall, given that he came back from basically getting like some of his spine like shaved. I think the discs like pretty serious thing for a 7 foot 260 or whatever player, or for anyone for that. I wouldn't want that to happen to me. I don't do anything physical at all.
No.
But the defense looks better this year. The shot looks great. There was just a great piece in The Athletic from Eric Name about how he's working with this shot thing that calls out your angles and everything, and really reworked his jumper. And it's like going into like age 34, age 35 season, like Brook Lopez being that dedicated, that open to change, I think is really cool. And yeah, it showed off tonight, 7 for 9 from deep. He's been the Bucks' most consistent player, I would say, this season. Giannis dealing with some injuries, been up and down. I won't say their best, but he's been great this year. And he certainly was. I think playing against Robin kind of added a little bit of fuel to the fire, too.
Yeah, I was going to fight you if you stuck with him being their best player, because I think Giannis is the best player in the league at this point. You know, this is not a trend that I love with the Cavs. Not just the losing, but the playing teams that, you know, are due for a good shooting night or are due, like, really kind of want to get a win. I think that was the case with Sacramento, where obviously the Garland dealing with the flu there wasn't helpful, but coming off two losses where it was basically taken away from them by the refs. Clippers were looking to get right. Warriors are trying to get back on track, and that was the game they decided to stop playing their young guys that had basically cost them all the games early in the season. It's definitely disappointing. The Minnesota one's a bit of an outlier with Mitchell, Allen, and Wade out. I have a harder time having real takeaways from this one, but I thought the Cavs actually did a very good job on Giannis. I thought the decision to start Lamar Stevens was a smart one. I know we had talked prior to the game, and I was talking about how I'd probably go Robin Lopez, but when I heard that Lamar had gotten the start, I was like, you know what, that does make some sense, because he's obviously got more of kind of the lateral mobility to stick with Giannis, as well as some of the strength to deal with him. The Cavs, unfortunately, their strategy of trying to take charges was not something that the refs were going for in the first half.
Ethical basketball. Appreciated that from the officials. That's ethics right there.
You know what? There's only so much you can do, and at least they were consistent with it. The Bucks didn't try to take as many charges as the Cavs, but the officials were not calling any of those. But I thought Lamar did a really good job on Giannis. Can you speak to kind of the job the Cavs did overall on Giannis? Because, I mean, he still had 16, 12, and 8, but on 6 of 18 shooting. But for a player as good as Giannis, I thought that was one of the kind of bright spots for the Cavs on a overall shaky night defensively.
Yeah, he was frustrated. And I think some of it stems from before this game. He's been in a funk. He missed a couple games with knee soreness, which always kind of pops up here and there for Giannis, given that he is a superhuman, literally a freak, right? The Greek freak. So not that he's, I think, overly hampered. He's still playing, right? But he's still a force of nature. But I think certainly the Cavs did a good job. I like Lamar over, I mean, Mobley, I think, would have been interesting to see more. Obviously, we had some possessions. But Robin Lopez, like, if you don't have the lateral speed, it's just really hard with how fast he can get by guys. So I think this, it reminded me a little bit of the way the Heat and Suns, both with Jay Crowder, boss man, would defend Giannis, where I really expected to see more of, you know, oh, it's got to be Bam on Giannis, and they don't have a backline defense. No, instead put a smaller guy on him who's at least going to stay in front of him, make him work, go through him, maybe pick up some offensive fouls. As you said, that didn't really happen this game. And then kind of, you know, bring in the defense behind him. And that even, I mean, obviously with Jared Allen healthy, that gives you a much better defensive line. Yeah. But still Mobley and some guys, other perimeter players helping from the nail, did a good job. He did not get in a rhythm all night. Does end up with 8 assists, moved the ball well, took advantage of the space that was created there. But certainly, usually, you know, even if the defense is collapsing, he'll move the ball well and still go get 30. So it's always an impressive job, win or lose to some extent, when you hold Giannis to 16 on 18 shots. Like, that says you worked hard as a defense and you had a pretty good plan.
Yeah. And when we had talked about the game before, I had been an advocate for kind of having Mobley as being the help guy, right? Someone that's able to. To provide that support. I think Giannis, Draymond, like that's the archetype that I like to see Evan Mobley in, and that's why I've always been such an advocate for keeping him with a traditional center. But, you know, like when you look at the night overall, and I'll definitely get to Mobley a little bit later because I thought he had an awesome game. It definitely felt like the Cavs, the game plan was to slow down Giannis and hoping that would be enough. And in the first half, you know, they really committed to slowing him down, to disrupt his rhythm and limit his effectiveness. And I thought the rotations were good beyond that. But then as other guys started to get rolling and the rest of the supporting cast really stepped up for Atlanta, it just the breakdown started to become a little bit more frequent. And I think especially that occurred with Kevin Love out there. There was moments where he was kind of playing center and there was a lot of difficulties on the defensive end there. But, you know, it almost reminded me of when the Cavs would play the Budenholzer Hawks, where there's so much commitment to trying to slow down LeBron. And eventually, like, Giannis is going to make those same reads. And when the role players start getting going and you have a J.R. Smith or a Channing Frye knocking down a bunch of threes, like Brook Lopez played the role of Channing Frye against Budenholzer tonight. And once those threes start going down, you start kind of second guessing. You start like the rotations become a half step slower. And eventually, I in the third quarter, which I think was the story of the game, those breakdowns just became way too frequent and they were giving up open looks. What adjustments to you stood out from the Milwaukee standpoint of what Milwaukee did after halftime to make that third quarter so decisive in their favor?
Yeah, it seemed like, I mean, I think the defense stepped up a little bit. I mean, a lot of those looks to the Cavs, I guess not to their credit maybe, but to less of their defensive detriment, did feel like they were coming on transition and semi-transition. And I think part of what stood out to me from this game just generally, and it's probably a bigger talking point we can circle back to, but I think, you know, Garland and Mitchell looked so good early. And it felt early for, you know, we're chatting with Bucks fans and stuff, and it's like, oh, it's over. Like, they're not going to be able to catch up because, you know, they just don't have the offensive firepower outside of Giannis. That's consistent night to night. Obviously, tonight they did with Brook Lopez and Wara and some other guys. But I think really the physical defense the Bucks play, you know, especially Javon Carter, who's going to press guys 90 feet from the rim. I think it felt like the backcourt for the Cavs got just a little bit worn down. And those semi-contested looks just weren't falling as much. I think both guys ended up shooting like fairly inefficiently overall. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like around them, like with Kevin Love, with the defense, right? I think he only shot 3 times, which I was like kind of concerned about Kevin Love coming in, especially Giannis tends to drift away from guys. So if he's got that assignment, like, oh, I could see Kevin Love lighting up the Bucks a little bit, holding him to only a couple shots, I think is a win for the Bucks and just keeping him off the floor. And outside of that, I mean, like Lamar Stevens knocks down a couple threes to his credit. The Bucks weren't respecting him. He did make them pay a bit for that. Just wasn't enough other offensive firepower. So I think the Bucks on the defensive end, kind of weathering the early storm from those star guards and then kind of slowing down the Cavs offense and really getting out and running on the other end helped make that happen. Offensively, though, I think, you know, Giannis shooting a little less, distributing a little more, and even playing more without him and just, you know, going away from, okay, I'm going to size up Lamar Stevens and, you know, I'm just going to take him and win because that's what I do, wasn't really working. I think they focused more on ball movement and, you know, really getting shots for Brook Lopez, who just could not miss.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to the maturity in Giannis's game, because I think earlier in his career, he would take that matchup personally, where it's, okay, you're sticking Lamar Stevens on me. I'm a little frustrated. I'm just going to keep you know, ramming my head into the wall and try to get to the free throw line. But he kind of just trusted his teammates. And that's one of the things, one of the progressions in his game that to me, that's why I have the Bucks as the best team in the league. I have him as the best player in the league. Like, this is just a really well-run team. And the fact that they've been able to navigate these injuries, I think it goes to show that, hey, this is a group that's been together for a while. They know how to navigate injuries. They know how to navigate guys being in and out of the lineup. And when you have a player as good as Giannis, even when he has an off game, he's able to contribute in a lot of different ways. But I completely agree. Like, as bad as the third quarter was for the Cavs, and a lot of focus has gone on to the defensive end, I think the offense was worse than the defense, honestly. Like, 18 points, and a lot of that 18 kind of came in the last couple minutes of the quarter as well. 18-34 was the deficit. That was the story of the game. That's been the story of the last two games for the Cavs, is one bad quarter that kind of really sinks everything. Against Minnesota, it was the first quarter. Against Milwaukee, it was the third. And the offense, just overall, it was not working when Darius Garland wasn't on the court. When Garland was on the court, they were only -1 for the night. Was his personal plus minus, but, you know, 23 points, 8 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 stocks. I thought overall he had a good game. A little bit of trouble finishing on the inside. Some of that finishing around the rim wasn't there. I think a few times he was trying to draw contact that just wasn't there and threw up some wild attempts. But that slump that Donovan Mitchell went through in the middle of the game really hurt them as well.
Oh, for 6 in the third quarter for Mitchell. I was just pulling up the individual stats from that period.
Yeah, he had a 1-of-11 stretch in the middle of the game. And that's going to hurt, especially on a night when you are down Jared Allen. And that's going to limit some of the easy offense that you're able to get off of his pick and roll action and really kind of the bread and butter of what the Cavs do. If Donovan's not hitting shots and kind of goes through one of those cold funks, that's really going to make things difficult for you. But credit to Milwaukee, man. Like, they consistently stuck with the game plan and really going 5 out, or, you know, 4 out and Giannis. Because, as he said, you got to even it out somehow, right? Like, he's a monster in the paint. Yeah. He's a monster passing. He can do it all. He just can't hit threes.
Those clips are so funny. He gives the staff for the shoes, and he's saying all the stuff it does, and the guy goes, "Help me shoot better," and Giannis is like, "I don't know about that." Talk about being self-aware, man.
Honestly, I think it's criminal that the league hasn't done more to push him as the face of the league. Like, he's such a great interview. He's just one of the most likable dudes. Not when he's beating my team, but, you know, outside of that, really likable dude. What was I going to say? I lost my train of thought because that was just one of my favorite quotes. But going 4 out with Giannis really stretched the Cavs out, because what makes the Jared Allen, Evan Mobley pairing so unique is not only are they so good at rim protection, they're able to get out on the perimeter. And Dean Wade's a really important part of that as well. Like, when the Cavs had their late season slide last year, the absence of Dean Wade, the season-ending injury that Dean Wade suffered, was not brought up enough, because he's someone that can rotate over and be a very good rim protector and defender, but he can actually stick with wings, right? Like, he was disruptive on Jason Tatum. I think he would have drawn a lot of minutes against Giannis in this matchup as well, like the combination between he and Lamar. And, you know, when you're down two guys that have the ability to both guard on the perimeter and protect the rim, that's going to leave your defense vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think on the other side for the Bucks defense, give some credit to Javon Carter, who really has been kind of, I won't say unsung, because we won't shut up about him, but one of, like, the heroes of this stretch without all the players from Milwaukee. I mean, he starts the season as a starter, which shocked us when, you know, Drew and everyone except Chris is playing, and really has never given up that spot. And then has a 36-12 game against OKC, where they pull out an overtime win. Has 20-something-6 against the Spurs. A little quieter tonight, but still 11 on 5-for-10 shooting and 8 assists. Basically just has stepped in as their starting point guard, still giving great defense. I think he took some more shifts on Mitchell as part of that second half, and that might have been one of the Bucks' quieter adjustments. And then Brook Lopez, for all the talk about the offense, is, like, just relentless at the rim. Our thing is yelling, just don't try him when guys try him. And I mean, at one point, standing still, I think it was Garland, he got trying to just go up, and Brooke just kind of reaches over, just like, no. Like, trying Brooke around the rim is I'll never forget the Rockets game. The young Rockets just kept trying to dunk on him, and he's just like sending him out of bounds, man. Like, you gotta, I get wanting to climb the mountain, and there's not much left to play for in that game, maybe, but if it's me, I'm making business decisions if I see Brook Lopez. I'll tell you that much.
Look, you got to make a business decision when you see a track record like that. Yeah, having a 3-and-D center is definitely a luxury, and especially on a team like Milwaukee and around a player like Giannis. Like, there really isn't a more perfect center to have. Like, it's amazing the evolution of his career, where he went from like the most traditional big man on the planet to, you know, like a legitimate stretch five that goes 7-for-9 against the Cavs.
It's literally like there's a little bit of malaise, I think I pronounced that wrong, among Bucks fans of like, what's the Brook succession plan? And obviously the only other true center on the roster is Serge Ibaka. He's not succeeding anyone, right? And Mamu, just not a center, more of a four. Funky player, fun player, but he's not going to be their long-term center. And I kind of get it, because like, how do you replace a guy like that? Like, I think he is, in skill set-wise, one of the more unique players in the league. I think like Miles Turner, I guess you could put there. A little different, I think, and you know, would be, I think, a great buck in the future, but we'll see. He's still, you know, trying his hardest to go to the Lakers right now anyway, but it's just, it's so cool.
I really like you campaigning for him. You're going to get fined for tampering here, buddy.
Well, listen, he should first. If he's not getting fined for tampering, I think I should be okay.
Yeah.
Not all of us work for the teams we're podcasting about. I know you forget that sometimes. I'm in the wilderness here. But he's really like such an irreplaceable player for them. And we've talked about, you know, they're without Chris sometimes. And obviously that ended up being too much against Boston. But it's almost harder to be without Brook Lopez than a guy like Chris, because no one else on the team does that skill set. And Giannis spent all of last season like, I miss Brook so much. I hate having to play center this much. I hate not having him behind me, all of that stuff. So, yeah, it really, I'm glad we're getting to appreciate Brook here. And he obviously had a night worth appreciating. But all the little things he does, like, such a unique and great buck.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Were you at all surprised that with the Cavs kind of being forced to go smaller tonight, that Milwaukee went bigger and, you know, like with Bobby Portis, Brook Lopez, and Giannis out there, and that it was as effective as it was? Like, that to me kind of stood out as kind of one of the key points of the game was, okay, Milwaukee's going bigger. What impact does this have? Well, I certainly think it had an impact on the Cavs finishing on the inside.
Yeah.
But, you know, like from the standpoint of like who the Cavs were starting, I was a little surprised that Caris LeVert wasn't able to do more with Bobby Portis matched up against him. Like, I felt like that was kind of one of the more missed opportunities in this game, where if you can't take advantage of that matchup, if you can't like get him out in space, you know, expose him in transition, like I understand that like Caris is trying to play more team basketball, and I think overall it's been very helpful. But that stood out to me as kind of one of the missed opportunities when you're kind of looking at how these teams match up.
Yeah, especially the funny thing that Lamar does make them pay. Because, right, when you're playing that big to a certain level, you're kind of just betting against the other perimeter players, right? I mean, funny enough, the healthy Cavs are one of the teams that would actually probably be relatively as big as the Bucks played tonight. But without Allen, they're just not. But I do think it's a little bit of just a bet against, you know, the Lamar Stevenses, Caret LeVerts of the world, Evan Mobley, who doesn't attempt a three. Okoro had to play a lot tonight with all the injuries. And, you know, Kevin Love didn't get to play as much. Rollo plays a bit. Robin Lopez.
Rollo, come on. You got to get
I don't know why. Former Bucks legend, Robin Lopez. I don't know why I get that nickname wrong. But I think the Bucks just kind of bet against the Cavs perimeter shooting to a certain extent and ended up winning out. The other thing, though, is it's not that bold of a bet just because the other options on the roster are just not there to the same extent. I mean, Wara played great. You know, we had argued for him not even playing on this version of the team in prior podcasts. George Hill has been a lot quieter than he was tonight a lot of the season. You know, then you get into like AJ Green, Mamu, your two-way guys. So with who Brooke, Giannis, and Bobby are on the roster, I think they're always going to play to a certain extent. But I think we saw them really succeed, and the Bucks were able to lean into that against Cleveland.
Yeah, and I think some people might say, well, you know, like, when you're swapping out Lamar Stevens for Jared Allen, are you really losing spacing? But the vertical spacing is very important, right? Like what Jared Allen is able to do as a screen setter, the threat of him as a lob in the lob game, like just his understanding of where to be, I think is really a big deal for the Cavs offense. And when you have, you know, Garland, Mitchell, and then Mobley, who's starting to, you know, in flashes, show more on the offensive end, I think sometimes it's easy to forget about the impact that Jared Allen has. Hopefully he'll be back soon. He had been dealing with some ankle soreness, but I think the reason he was listed as out was non-COVID illness for this game. So
it's going around, man.
Yeah, it's definitely going around. And Garland was dealing with it last week. You know, you beat the Lakers, you win the battle, but you lose the war. The whole team was playing with the flu. So maybe it's illness. Maybe it's just the stink. Who knows? But it seems to stick with the Cavs. But you know, like Jared hasn't played since Friday. So maybe, you know, if he's a little under the weather, it was a good opportunity to get him some rest and maybe help out with that ankle soreness. Hopefully he's back Friday. I think Cavs have a good opportunity to have a get right game against Charlotte on Friday. I saw LaMelo Ball went down with an injury tonight. You hate to see that, especially when he's already missed so much of the season. I love watching the Cavs against LaMelo. So disappointed to see that, but it is, you know, an opportunity going into a homestand to get on the right track. This 5-game losing streak, I was trying to figure out when this would be the longest losing streak since, and I was surprised. Apparently, the month of November is not great for the Cavs because the Cavs last November went on a 5-game losing streak. Wow. They actually fell to 9-10, which, you know, when you go, this is a great example of just how long an 82-game season is, because the start of the year, looking back on it now, you just think, oh, yeah, man, it was so much fun. And like all the way through January, the vibes were good. They were winning all these games. They were a half game out of first place in the Eastern Conference. I don't remember the Cavs falling to below 500 at the 19-game mark. That to me doesn't seem real. Honestly, it seems as unreal as Dylan Windler playing 50 games last season, which unfortunately another injury setback for him. Hopefully he will be able to bounce back. But yeah, just one of those things and one of those reminders that an NBA season is a damn long thing.
It's so funny because there are, and I know you can relate to this, but so many fans right now are the Bucks. Are like, at least before now things are good, right? Before this game, like pretty doom and gloom with the injuries. And, you know, it's like lingering stuff, you know, knock on wood, things have changed on Bucks injury reports before, but nothing currently expected to be a weeks or months long from here setback. They lose two straight games with so many guys out. And there's just like all this, oh man, they're never going to get healthy. The season's, it's like, guys, it's mid-November. Like none of this will stick out. If they can get healthy a week from now, a month from now, none of this will matter. And that's funny you say that about the Cavs 9-10 in November, because like as a, you know, league watcher, fan of the league, I think back about the Cavs season, and you're right, it's like the first start and the middle was so great, and then all the injuries and it stinks. And you know, they couldn't keep up with Brooklyn in the play-in and all that. You definitely don't think back on the Cavs like, oh yeah, they overcame the slow start. It gets totally erased. So
yeah,
I think for both of these teams, Cavs still sitting, you know, out of the play-in even after this losing streak, right? And the Bucks obviously holding near the top of the East with these injuries. I think both of these teams are doing a pretty good job of overcoming a lot of bumps in the road here in October, November.
For sure. And, you know, I think it's so important. Like, I definitely understand if you're a Cavs fan and, you know, you don't have the time to watch other teams and follow what's going on with other teams in the league. But I think there's like a sentiment that, hey, like, once again, injuries are striking, like we're the most injured team in the league, et cetera. But if you don't count for Ricky Rubio and Dylan Windler's missed games, they're actually like the third. They've had the third fewest man games missed in the NBA, right?
It's been
like,
a brutal season so far, man.
It really has been a brutal season across the league. And you know, like I brought this up last podcast when we were kind of discussing like the minutes being up for some of the Cavs players. The minutes are up across the league. Like the stat I had was 27 players playing over 35 minutes per game, the most since 2013-2014. Like it's pretty remarkable. And Cavs, you know, I was hoping that maybe they'd be able to keep the minutes low by, you know, having some blowout wins, but keeping them low because you rest some guys in the fourth quarter. Rest is rest, baby. But I do think it's important that we have to get to Evan Mobley, because Mobley had probably his worst game of the season against the Wolves. And for him to bounce.
I thought you were going to say tonight. I was going to say, what am I missing? Is this guy averaging 50 and 30 if this is his worst game of the season? Okay, I'm glad you said so. I was like, wow, I knew he's good. I didn't know he was on Wilt trajectory. Okay, okay,
yeah, that makes sense. He's not quite there yet. Give it a couple more years. He's still in the Giannis before picture, and we'll transition it in a couple years.
This is pretty far from rookie Giannis. I'm not making any comps here, but that he's a much farther than Giannis before like year four at least, I think.
and I think sometimes like with Mobley being so far ahead of the curve, like we expected it to be a process, but like with him being ahead of the curve now, all of a sudden like you accelerate your expectations too. And you know, he's still 21, is going to have up and down games, and I saw people got a little low on him after the Wolves game. But like when you look at his recent game log, these games are becoming a little more frequent on the offensive end. I thought he was very assertive offensively, and it's nice to see him quickly bounce back from a down game going up against Rudy Gobert and having one against a very good Bucks defensive front court. Like I thought his defense was obviously fantastic. Like he had multiple tie-ups on Giannis. I thought the help side blocks and just the way that he was able to contest shots was really, really impressive. But the funny thing is, when Mobley is playing as that help defender, it's really important, like for the Cavs defensive scheme, for somebody else to come in and get that rebound, right? Like if he's contesting the shot, he's up in the air. He's not in position to get the rebound. And that's usually where you have Jared Allen or Dean Wade or some of these other guys stepping in, or even Donovan Mitchell and Caris LeVert have done a good job rebounding overall. But that wasn't the case tonight. But overall, I was just really impressed with Mobley. What stood out to you?
I think and I'm a sucker for some of the lost arts in the league. And, you know, having Robin Lopez, I'm sure, is helping him with this. But some of those baby hooks in the mid paint area, the you know, the short paint area, right? Like right around the restricted area or just outside of it, a little outside of it, I'll say. Doing that over Brook Lopez, I think he made it look really easy. I expected maybe half of those shots that went in to actually go in, because the phrase I use about Brook is like deceptively long. So this is when he gets dragged out onto the perimeter, like perimeter players shoot lower than you would always expect over him, because he's a behemoth, and he gets the arm up, like he tries. Obviously, he's a very sound defender, you know, DPOY level to start this season, certainly all defensive level. And the fact that Mobley, it just felt like continually a lot of those nine shots were just, oh, I'm just going to put it over Brook, and it's just like cash, like right in. That's really hard to do. And it's one of those things that if you don't watch a lot of the Bucks, maybe it doesn't register as such. But we were really impressed watching the game. Like, wow, he's just like banking these things, not even banking. He's just like laying these in with ease, shows all the touch. And I do think his game for his age and his size is just so refined. Like it was, a seeming like not effortless, but such a smooth like 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks, a steal, no turnovers. Like that is an elite stat line for a young player with not a ton of, we had helper. I mean, it's 2 star guards here, but you know, not a full strength team around him. And the one play too, where he leaks out in transition, gets behind Brook, which not hard to outrun Brook Lopez, but still you just see like at his size, the speed is really there. It just always impresses me when I watch him, what he does as a player, the complete package with Mobley.
Yeah, and I still feel like the Cavs can do a better job, with the exception of Garland, like finding him when he's cutting off ball, because you can tell like he kind of gets into passing lanes and like Donovan might recognize it like a second later. And at that point, that pass is
gone. Yeah.
But that's one of those things that you hope once you get to the middle of the season, you're going to get more easy buckets as a result of that, because I'll need to check the numbers. But to me, it certainly feels like there's been more unassisted buckets for Mobley this season, like a little more self-creation, the little mid-range jumpers and as you mentioned, the hook shots, pretty new addition to his game as well. What do you feel like the offensive ceiling is for Mobley? Because I have seen that debated a little bit. I think a lot of that comes down to just impatience overall. But where do you kind of see him going in the future? Because obviously, as a Bucks fan, you have witnessed one of the greatest kind of player development stories in league history.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I always try to not get too, I try to not buy into the linear progression with these guys, because you just see it just doesn't usually work out that way. And not saying it won't with Mobley, but it's just hard.
I want to steal a comparison that I heard recently. Sorry to cut you off, but.
No, I wonder if you're going to take what, go ahead. I have one in mind.
I wish I knew who said this, because I thought it was really smart. But when it comes to player development, they said it's more like the stock market than it is something linear. There really are kind of those peaks and valleys, ups and downs. But you have to look at the overall trend of, okay, how high are the peaks getting? How low are the lows getting? How frequent is it, right? And over time, you can see the trend. But if you're looking on a game-to-game basis, you can kind of miss the forest through the trees.
100%. So I'm just pulling up because I don't know. I feel like this isn't. It's okay. So I see some Bosch in him, and I know Bosch more of a shooter, and I think maybe it took Bosch longer to get to score that much. But just the way that you just feel comfortable with him anywhere on the floor on either end. And again, he's not shooting threes yet, and we'll see if that comes along. I don't think it's necessary. Mm-hmm. It may be necessary for them to go like championship level with this front court pairing, because I do think you're just a little too confined to the paint between him and Allen right now. I think it would really open up a ton for them.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see though. It could be the 3-point shot, could be more creation, more shot creation, or for others, maybe more out of the post now that he seems to be developing those games. Like, I don't want to put him into a box, but I say Bosch just because of that. The comfort level with him doing so much. And I think defensively, especially for Mobley right now, of like on the perimeter, cool, he's great out there. Around the rim, cool, like he'll tie up Giannis on the way up. And I think that versatility is really special. So maybe a little KG as well. Maybe KG is closer because he didn't get out as much stretchy. Those kind of players, though. And I think, you know, the toughness of KG, I think right now the finesse of his game is maybe where I'm getting Bosch from. But I mean, 2 Hall of Fame players, 2 champions. I hope it doesn't sound like I'm slighting him. I feel like there may be a lot of expectations on Mobley.
Good Lord.
But...
No, Bosch and KG aren't slights. And you know, they're certainly with like body type, that those are ones that you hear a fair bit. And what always encourages me is that he's always looking to initiate contact. He doesn't have the physique of Giannis to really move a body when he puts a shoulder into somebody. But just the fact that like that's the mentality of, you know, I'm not throwing that much weight, but I'm going to put my body into you. He's now making a habit of dunking on Giannis, which is pretty great. I don't know if you saw the picture from the game, but
I haven't seen the pic yet.
Oh man, it's a really good one. You got kind of Giannis cowering a little bit. It would, you know, if they win that game like they did, what I called the turning point game last season, where the Cavs had that big signature win over the Bucks. Both teams healthy. I know they had a great record against the Bucks last year, but that there was some health asterisks in most matchups. But that one game, you know, they came with that signature win over the Bucks, and then after that point, Garland's back issues started coming up. Lowry went down. Then, you know, Garland misses most of February. Then Karras comes, he's out. Then you lose Wade. Then you lose Allen. Then you lose Mobley. And then, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Terrible. Yeah, that was not fun at all. So
no.
When the Cavs are, like, cautious with injuries, like, you know, resting Donovan Mitchell because he had some ankle soreness against the Wolves. Even though he had a shooting slump in this game, it didn't seem like that ankle was bothering him. It seems like that they have their kind of finger on the pulse when it comes to that stuff. So, you know, if it comes with a few losses that you wouldn't like to have, but can prevent some of these kind of long-term injuries, I'm all in favor of playing it safe when it comes to resting guys.
I sleep great knowing the Bucks are going to be really cautious and, you know, maybe ruin somebody's Wednesday when they go to watch Drew and Chris and Pat and none of those guys are playing, but mm-hmm. You know, they have June goals, right? And that really shows. I'll say this too about Mobley. The reason I don't compare pretty much anyone to Giannis is I just think, and this comes from the Ben Simmons thing originally, that terrible comp way back when.
I may have done it once or twice. I'm sorry.
Everyone got it on this once or twice. I mean, there was a time when it did seem like Ben was going to be the
better
player.
We're really not imaginative when it comes to comps and like even like team building comps, right? Like play style comps. Like we really, really aren't imaginative.
Who's on top? You should be that. You're that, right? Are you going to be the guy on top? Where's your Steph Curry? Where's your Draymond?
Yeah.
Man, good luck. Good luck finding either of those guys. But it's the mentality that very few players have that Giannis has. Just like keep on going. You know, the famous quote, like I airballed two in Oklahoma City. You know, I've been at the bottom, and just the relentlessness, not just physicality, but just the relentlessness to go with it. That's just so rare in the league. You know, I compare it like I think Ja Morant has some Giannis. He just like keeps going and he's just so relentless. I haven't seen that from Mobley yet, which isn't a negative. That's not the only way to play. That's not the only way to be great. Mm-hmm. But that's why I think I see there's just he's got a better jumper right now probably than Giannis, who's been really off all season. Right now for sure. Mm-hmm. Last year Giannis actually had a pretty good midi. All of his jumpers, all of his shots have been really off this season. So hoping we can get that tweaked. But that's just I don't know. Mobley's I love these young guys where I'm just like I feel like his career could go a dozen different positive ways, and I can't wait to see which one it is.
Yeah, to me, one of the real big positive when it comes to Evan Mobley is it seems like the offense is better when he's getting touches. Like, even if he's not necessarily scoring, keeping him involved is so important because a lot has been made of the Cavs' kind of big question mark, which is the small forward position, right? Like, when you have Garland and Mitchell, Mobley and Allen, that fifth guy is going to be what people focus on, right? But what you want from kind of a playmaking forward is when teams trap and do the things that defenses can do against a 6-1 and 6-3 guard, you need to have someone in the front court that can alleviate that pressure and initiate some offense. And for the Cavs to work as currently constructed, Evan Mobley needs to be that guy because I don't think you're necessarily getting that from the small forward position, at least not at a consistent level. Karras can alleviate some pressure, but as we saw tonight, it's not at a consistent basis where he's giving you that kind of playmaking hub and what you would want from a point forward. So keeping Mobley involved, initiating things earlier in the shot clock, that was one of the things we really harped on, and I thought they actually did a better job of getting into their sets against Milwaukee. To me, that really jumps out as one of the Cavs' most consistent routes to better offense. And the fact that Mobley's part of that equation is really, really encouraging.
Yeah, and I think, too, I think just logically, when you look at how the floor is going to be set up for them with that, you know, the four obvious guys and then whoever, Karras or whoever, Dean Wade, if it's him out there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Mobley being the guy who is the release valve for the guards being trapped or whatever else, it also makes more sense because it just logically opens up the floor. Because then that small forward position player is able to, you know, roam, whether he's cutting, whether he's spotting up, whatever he's doing. Versus if it's that guy, if it's going to Karras, could still have one and a half defenders in the paint in front of him there around Mobley and Allen too. And the vertical spacing, I mean, that, of course, that's important and that makes it harder. But still, I mean, just more bodies versus less bodies in the paint. I mean, that's the Bucks thing, right? You talk about five and a half or four or five and a half. I said it twice. Four and a half or five out. You know, we have this one guy who teams aren't worried about shooting. Let's just put the ball in his hands a bunch. So then they kind of have to respect him or he's at the rim. So I think it makes a ton of sense. I do think long term, not to put, you know, a ton of pressure on a second year player, But of course, I think their ultimate ceiling is going to rest on whatever Mobley. I don't think he has to shoot. I don't think he has to do any one thing. But wherever he develops, I mean, clearly they've got something built where if he ends up being as special as a lot of folks think, you know, they're going to contend because they have all this infrastructure around him already, which is, I love team building like this. I love not doing the thing like with Towns or with Shea, where it's like, we're just going to suck for a while and we'll make a move later. Like, no, make the move, be good. And then like, that's good for development. You don't need to be on bad teams for 1,000 years to develop in the league. It happens like that because of the draft and everything, but I don't think there's a necessity. And the fact that some teams treat it like there is always baffling to me.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, like the Cavs, as a result of the offseason moves they made, you're going to get teams' best shot on a consistent basis. Oh, yeah. And you know, like that is going to lead to some frustrating nights. That's going to lead to kind of exposing maybe some of the inconsistencies that you have as a young team. But that's really, really important, right? Like that's how you learn from those mistakes. And I think we're going to have an opportunity to see how the Cavs adjust and the mental toughness that they have, because they're now going into a homestand. You play Charlotte, but after that, you play Miami and you play Atlanta. And it's going to be 3 games in 4 nights. Really, really important to, obviously, from a standings standpoint, to get wins over Miami and Atlanta. Personally, I'd like to see like a 2-1 stretch over there. Then you play Portland on Wednesday before playing in Milwaukee again. So that's a
tough stretch.
We'll be, you know, it's not going to get any easier from here on out. And even then, like you play Milwaukee on Friday, then you play at Detroit and at Toronto. Another 3 games in 4 nights stretch where Toronto is sitting at home the whole time and rested for that game on Monday. Like, that sucks. All of these games are going to be really difficult. And if the Cavs are able to respond and, you know, stay above 500 for this stretch of games, I think that would be a real feather in their cap and something that they can build upon and have that midseason push that gets them back up the standings like they had last season, right? Like, I really think it's important to kind of highlight the fact that, hey, everything wasn't solved at this point last year. There's going to be some growing pain still. Even if the Cavs come out and they win a bunch of these games, I don't think that necessarily means that we aren't going to see lulls like this. It's just part of the process with a young team.
Yeah, I just got to say, it's so fun, especially with the way the East is right now. Not all the teams are good, but all the teams at least I think have one guy where you're like, oh, I'm excited to watch that guy for 48 minutes. And most of the teams are good. And even though, you know, of course, at the end of the day, do I want the Bucks to win a bunch and, you know, go win a bunch more in the playoffs? Obviously, yes. But it's more fun to go through this long season when it's like, oh, man, we're playing OKC. Oh, OKC is 5-6. Oh, Shea has got 30-12-8. Oh, OK, this is good, right? Like, you know, the Pacers aren't tremendously good, but Tyrese Halliburton is like the best pure point guard in the league right now. And Mathurin looks great. And, you know, the Magic stink, but Paolo is great. You know, the Pistons stink, but Cade's coming along. Look great in one game against the Bucks. I'll give him that. But
again, growth isn't linear, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I just think it's a cool place for the league, especially the East. And it's kind of fun to do. But the Bucks have had a pretty weak schedule, which is kind of nice given all the injuries. But this was a game that certainly was circled as like, oh, this is going to be a really good one, even if both teams are missing a couple guys, because we know these teams can play at a high level. So certainly I think the Cavs are seen as maybe not all the way there. I think there's certainly going to be people who leading into a playoff series are fading them a little bit just for, you know, the inexperience at that level. Yeah. But I think regular season wise, with the kind of slump that Miami and some of these other teams, Philly, are in, I think they're certainly seen as like, oh, you got to get up for the Cavs because they're a good team. They play winning basketball despite the, you know, little losing streak here.
Yeah, and for me, I'm not worried about the Cavs at this point. Like, I think they have more than enough talent. I think it's a matter of, you know, playing better and figuring out some of these things. Obviously, getting healthy would be helpful, but I think they've had enough to win each of these games, with maybe the exception of Minnesota. But even then, like, they got back into that game, and I think there's some positives here as well, where Evan Mobley's getting more consistent run out there. Lamar Stevens, I know he went 3 of 10, but I think he did a good job overall against Milwaukee and has done enough to say, hey, maybe he should have a consistent spot in the rotation. Thought Isaac Okoro had a better game as well. This is kind of 2 more solid games for him. And all of that's encouraging if you're looking to kind of alleviate some of the minutes that the starters have been playing, go a little deeper into the bench. So there's definitely positives there. And for me, I have 100% got Friday, November 25th against Milwaukee circled on my calendar.
I hope the injury reports are non-existent for that. I mean, Joe Ingles will be out, right? But I hope outside of that they're non-existent.
Joe Ingles and Ricky Rubio can just kind of hang out for a little bit on the sidelines. But outside of that, I'd love to see both teams fully healthy. And just to clear up my notes from the game, obviously the offensive rebound advantage, 13-6, was big for Milwaukee. What really was disappointing to me was the Cavs actually had an advantage on turnovers, 18-14, but yet they lost the fast break battle by 15-6. Like, when you have six fewer turnovers, but you get smoked in the fast break, like, that is not something that should be the case, especially with Milwaukee going bigger for a lot of this game. You would think from a cross-matching standpoint that you would be able to take advantage of that. So when we're looking at that November 25th matchup, those things need to be better, whether it's Jared Allen helping on the defensive boards. And if you win that turnover battle again, you should be getting out running and getting in transition.
Yeah, definitely. I can't believe we've gotten this far without talking about the Jordan Warwick game.
Oh,
I mean, his best game of his career. I mean, I was so excited to talk to you about Beauchamp because I know you're high on Beauchamp as well.
I am. I love him.
1-for-8, had a travel, 4 offensive rebounds. He was one of the guys doing work on the offensive glass. Just makes good plays, fits in well, but has these cold shooting nights. So he'll bounce back. Love me some Marjon Beauchamp. But Jordan Wara, just complete basketball. A couple of excellent defensive plays. I mean, swipes the ball out along the baseline and gets Bucks possession back. I mean, a couple of really good defensive plays staying in front of, I think it was Darius Garland late in the game, kind of skittering around like Darren Ravel, but still did the job and was a good possession. 6-for-10 from the field, 5-for-9 from deep. Had about one steal, 1 block, 3 rebounds for Wara, 1 assist, which is pretty average for him. But just really fit in super well. And it's kind of remarkable because it seemed like the book on him had just not changed for 3 years. Like, there's some shot making there, but overall, just inconsistent. Like, the pieces just aren't together. He doesn't fit in that well. Just in the way Beauchamp does, he just looks like he fits out there. Wara hadn't. He's relocating to the corner. Like, just a really impressive game. And I'm so glad I've got you on here for this to boost this message, get this trade value up before January, because there's not going to be a rotation spot by then. But my goodness, a shout out to Jordan Wara for making that win possible for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Know what that is? Do you recognize what occurred with Jordan Wara tonight?
What's that?
It was the sneakiest revenge game of all time.
Because
game 82 against the Cavs last season, 7-of-23 from the floor, -26 when he was on the court. You know, Milwaukee's resting a whole bunch of guys. The Cavs just light them up. He's struggling. He remembered. He remembered that game, and he made it a point of emphasis to just go ham on the Cavs tonight, which I don't appreciate at all. But, you know, in a fight, both sides are going to land some punches, so maybe we come back on the 25th and we respond to the Jordan Noir game.
You also, I'm sure, you know, somewhere in there, he probably got snubbed by the Cavs on draft night and everybody else. He went 45th, so yeah, maybe that's internalized too. Who knows?
You know, you can't rule it out. Ty, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Love talking basketball with you. Before I let you go, is there anything you'd like the listeners to know about? Anything you want to plug?
I mean, really appreciate you having me on. If you're not already subscribed to this great podcast, wherever you're listening, you got to do that. Would appreciate if you subscribe to ours as well. Eurostep Podcast Network, covering all things Milwaukee Bucks, is our Bucks feed. Or you can just find, you know, everything that we do easily at gspn.info. But thank you so much, Justin, for having me.
Oh, thank you, man. Really appreciate it too. All of our listeners, we're not live on YouTube, but if you're watching future podcasts, make sure you're liking, subscribing, and clicking the notification bell so you know when we're going live on YouTube. If you want to support the podcast the traditional way, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cats!